Hey, hello everyone. Welcome to this Saturday. Thank you for spending it here with me. I don't have Evie with me today. She is feeling just a touch under the weather. There's a cold going around, so it's just us today, for better or worse, mostly worse. Hey, glad to be here with you. So let's tee it up today. What an incredible week we've been having with respect to banks, bank bail-ins, rescues. There have been all kinds of attempts to soothe markets, calm markets. There's been all kinds of things going on, but of course, none of it's really actually worked. So we saw some pretty bad market action on Friday, which could just be Wall Street throwing its typical perennial hissy fit saying we wanted more and we want more now. So that's how Wall Street rolls. They create a lot of crises and then they demand massive taxpayer-funded bailouts, which the politicians have to go out and lie about and say, those weren't taxpayer-funded. Of course they are, because if you're a taxpayer, you're paying for it. So that's just how that works. Now, today I do want to talk about anything you want to talk about, so drop them in the comments there. I'm monitoring the chat, so when my eye goes down like that, it's because I have a chat window in front of me there, so I'm looking at it. So if you have any questions, hit them, and I'll see if I can get to them. Meanwhile, you know me, I got a few slides to go through, things to talk about, so I want to tee this up. And I'm really struggling these days with trying to understand how it is that some people don't understand the role of incentives in shaping human behavior. And I'm talking about, I guess we would define these people as woke, as part of the deep state, as part of the hive mind. I call it the hive mind increasingly because it's not left or right necessarily, but there are people who believe in the authority of the state and that we all have to demand, you know, obedience and fealty to this ideology, idiotology, right? There's just certain things, they don't make sense. And they really fundamentally make the same mistake I think we've seen Marxist, socialist, communist. We're good. So all throughout history, when we're talking about whether Marxists, Bolsheviks, socialists, communists, they always seem to miss this one point, which is that incentives matter. And if you take people who have productive farms and you seize their farms and put them under the collective, people's desire to work for the collective never really pans out. And it doesn't work over and over and over again because we're not wired that way. We are wired to, humans are very adaptive. So we have two main modes. We have a mode where we'll call it tribal, meaning we're within our Dunbar limit, 150 relatives, as it were, in our village, and we can hold those number of relationships. And under those circumstances, humans behave exceptionally altruistically. You give now to somebody else because you know later you're going to have a receipt of something in reciprocity. So that works, but we have this other mode. And now we're living in agglomerations of more than 150 people, and all of a sudden that whole altruism working for the common good thing breaks down. So from a biological perspective, I think the Marxists are absolutely right. People will work beautifully for altruistic reasons, but they got it wrong because they didn't understand that that only works if you're like at 150 tribal or village members or less. So that's one of the big conflicts, but it's mysterious to me watching these people in power right now who are apparently just missing this entirely. Now, you know who didn't miss this is Charlie Munger. I live by this quote. You'll hear me say it over and over and over again. Hey, Arne, Aaron there, good morning to you as well. And thank you. I'll tell Evie you send your best to her because she is very under the weather. She had a little fever this morning and not feeling well, but thank you for that. Charlie Munger, right-hand man of Warren Buffett, said, show me the incentive and I will show you the outcome, right? So we've been following this trail, right? You show me the pharma money and I will show you the conclusion of that randomized controlled trial, right? You show me anytime there's an incentive, particularly a monetary incentive, and we can almost always predict the outcome because that's how humans are wired. We operate according to incentives. It's not even up for debate. It's one of the easiest things to understand. It's mysterious to me that we even have to talk about it, but we do, because what I'm seeing increasingly is that we have a group of people out there saying things like, you know, It really matters. This person's feelings, this one person's feelings really matter. That's how much I care about the individual. So they're saying that this they get this idea that this person matters, but they don't understand people at the level of the fact that when you give people incentives, they behave a certain way, right? So there's all kinds of examples around this now with prosecutors failing to prosecute people, leading to more crime, not less. Go figure. With the absolute perverse incentives that exist within the banking system, moral hazard, with the bailouts that come over and over again, all that. But I, to me, as jaded as I am about humans at this point, post-COVID, this little clip here from an exchange between a senator from Oklahoma and Janet Yellen really made me lose my ability to form words for a few minutes. And then I had some choice ones. Let's listen into this. This is in a recent Senate hearing. We're talking about the SVB and the signature bank bailouts. And the senator from Oklahoma has a very interesting, very reasonable question.
Start with some of the banking issues we're dealing with on it. Will the deposits in every community bank in Oklahoma, regardless of their size, be fully insured now? Are they fully recovered? Every bank, every community bank in Oklahoma, regardless of the size of the deposit, will they get the same treatment that SVB just got or Signature Bank just got?
A bank only gets that treatment if a majority of the FDIC board, a supermajority of the Fed board, and I, in consultation with the president, determine that the failure to protect uninsured depositors would create systemic risk and significant economic and financial consequences.
So what is your plan?
All right, hold up right there before we go on. So basically she's saying, look, some people sit around and we should sort of make a judgment call. Like they don't have a magic formula that says if they didn't bail out Signature Bank that there would be this systemic risk, which again isn't even fully defined. What is systemic risk, right? Is it the whole system is going to collapse? Or more likely, is it that some powerful people who are well-connected through that bank are going to lose some money and therefore it's going to have political significance for people in Washington, D.C.? But this whole idea that capitalism can't survive without an unelected group of people riding in and making judgment calls about who is a systemically important institution or bank versus others is an absolute travesty of everything we're supposed to believe in. Now, that's if you believe in the main narrative of the country, which is that it's capitalism, it's democracy, justice, freedom. None of those things apply when a small group of unelected people, a supermajority of the Fed board, none of whom are elected, right? A supermajority of the FDIC, none of whom are elected. Janet Yellen, not elected, right? So a supermajority of unelected people with conflicts of interest, with incentives, are going to make a decision randomly. This bank, not that one. Now, this is just what we saw in COVID, remember? Oh, a supermajority of health officials agreed that this small restaurant's going to have to close, but McDonald's can stay open. And these small stores are going to have to close down, but Amazon can still deliver. That these are vital or essential jobs, but these aren't. So all you white-collar workers can stay home, but all you blue-collar workers, we're going to need you to keep driving those trucks and delivering those packages and making the DoorDash show up at my place, right? So this is the conceit that settled in on this whole thing, and I raise this because this is why I say plant a garden. This is why I say you should own some gold. This is why I say you need to begin preparing as if this level of mendacity is actually what's happening. I mean, that's the hard part. You got to wrap your mind around the idea that Janet Yellen actually represents the caliber of people who are busy making life and death decisions. Okay, so first thing we found out from her statement here is that a random group of unelected people sit around and make random decisions over which banks are systemically important or not. Carry on.
Determination.
Right. So what is your plan to keep large depositors from moving their funds out of community banks into the big banks. We have seen the mergers of banks over the past decade. I'm concerned you're about to accelerate that by encouraging anyone who has a large deposit in a community bank to say, we're not going to make you whole, but if you go to one of our preferred banks, we will make you whole at that point.
Yeah. So obviously, this is standard incentive. So I'm sitting here, I'm a human being, and I go, well, I could keep my money in this local community bank, which does great stuff. I know the president of the bank. I know the people who work at the bank. They make loans in all of our local businesses. We've had this relationship that goes on forever and ever. But Janet Yellen and a couple of other super majorities may kick around and go, we don't care about those people. Let them lose their money. But anybody, if you belong to JP Morgan, Citi, one of the big nationals, Bank of America, we're going to protect them. Right? We'll make all depositors whole under that circumstance, right? Obviously, the incentive for me is like, well, I'd really rather not lose my money. The incentive couldn't be more simple to unravel and understand, which is people are going to take their money out of the community banks and give it to the big banks because the big banks have free, unlimited deposit insurance courtesy of Janet Yellen making up her random mind about which ones should fall under this new umbrella. This is a massive appropriation of taxpayer funds. Didn't go through Congress. Nobody voted for this. All of a sudden, you have an entrenched bureaucracy that has decided, you know what? We're gonna protect these over here now. They're just making it up on the fly, but the senator's pointing out there's an incentive. There's an incentive structure. Why wouldn't it be true now that people are going to take their money out of these small banks, thereby limiting, like crushing them and giving it all to the big banks because now it all belongs to the big banks, which of course is what Washington wants. They want all that power concentrated into the hands of just a few banks so that when they roll their central bank digital currencies out and everything gets administered through these four big major banks that are the only ones left, it's going to be a much easier row to hoe because you won't have options. You won't have the option of keeping your money in a local credit union or a savings bank or a cooperative bank or a mechanics bank, or any of the other small community banks that exist out there. They're clearly saying, we are going to use this opportunity to punish small and regional banks to the benefit of the big banks. When did you vote for that? I don't remember voting on that. All right, let's hear her answer to this, because this couldn't be an easier thing. Of course that's going to lead to an erosion of deposits to community banks, to the big banks. It's an incentive. Very easy to understand.
Look, I mean, that's certainly not something that we're encouraging.
That is happening right now.
That is happening because depositors are concerned about the bank failures that have happened and whether or not other banks could also fail.
No, it's happening because you're fully insured no matter what the amount is. If you're in a big bank, you're not fully insured if you're in a community bank.
Well, you're not fully insured. And
you were at Signature, and it just barely met that threshold. You were at Signature.
Well, we felt that there was a serious risk of contagion that could have brought down and triggered runs on many banks, and that something, given that our judgment is that the banking system overall is safe and sound, depositors should have confidence in the system, and we took these actions.
So there's a special assessment that's been done on community banks in my state and all banks across the country. Was there any discussion that special assessment would only apply to the larger banks, or was it always assumed the special assessment would cover every bank, including rural banks in my state?
I'm not certain what the rules are around that. That's for the FDIC to determine.
It has been reported publicly that SVB had a large number of Chinese investors that are there, including some that were companies directly connected to the Chinese Communist Party. Will those individuals, companies, entities, and investors that are Chinese investors be made whole based on assessments in my banks in Oklahoma? So what I'm asking is, will my banks in Oklahoma pay a special assessment to be able to make Chinese investors whole from Silicon Valley Bank?
Uninsured investors will be made whole in that bank. And I suppose that could include foreign depositors, but I don't believe there's any legal basis to discriminate among uninsured.
I get it, but I'm just saying my community banks are going to pay this additional fee. It is always fascinating to me as well, the conversation that taxpayers are being made whole in this, that taxpayers are not going to have any kind of consequence on this. I'm sure my bankers are going to be very excited to know they no longer pay taxes.
Because none of this will fall on taxpayers. It's going to fall on his bank. So his bankers are excited to find out they're not taxpayers anymore, as are we all. So let's review what just was said there. This is atrocious. So remember, once is an accident, twice is coincidence, but three times is enemy action, and 10 times is just certainly enemy action. If you were trying to destroy the community and local banking system, you could have no better person at the helm than Janet Yellen. Of course, she proved herself as a monetary vandal as chairman of the Federal Reserve, did extraordinary damage to the country. Now she's continuing that immense legacy of damage and continuing it on here, but pretending as if she's just ignorant over this whole, like, I don't know why we're not encouraging people to move deposits from your small banks to these big ones. Yeah, you are, Janet. That's called incentives. It's very easy to understand. It's not hard at all. And so, like, if you said, that's like Janice saying, I know you're sitting down at the roulette table and the government's guaranteed the black and the red squares. We're not sure why anybody wouldn't put their money on them. We're not sure compared to playing blackjack. We've just guaranteed the outcome at the roulette table, but people can still play blackjack if they want to, right? It's just stupid, right? So dumb, really dumb. I don't think she's that dumb, but she plays dumb pretty well. Or she's that dumb. I don't know. We have to figure that out. But so the issue then, though, is the other point being made is that, oh, they're going to apply a special levy to all the banks because this is going to be expensive. And that levy is to cover the costs, but the costs are only going to be, they're only going to cover it for these big systemic banks. So they're actually charging small banks and community banks to undercut their own business model and support the big players who, by the way, already have every advantage in the book, right? They're already the primary dealers. When the Fed prints money like crazy, they get first access to it. They get special rates of interest. They get covered, like every possible thing. So my model for this is the relationship between the federal government, the Federal Reserve, and the big banks is basically the federal government and the Federal Reserve as one thing. They are like the evil stepmother in the Cinderella story. And all the banks out there, these are the ugly stepsisters, right? Oh, did your profits get hurt a little bit there, little banky bank? Let us make it totally right, right? And all of us and the community banks, everybody, like the 99%, we're Cinderella in this story. And of course, we just get dumped on by the evil stepmom. It's literally, it's a broken relationship. It's broken because they don't serve the people. You get the sense that, right? Janet Yellen is not there speaking words that make you feel better or anybody in this world because you don't matter. She's there to serve the big institutions. She's there to serve her main clients. She's there to revolving door her way out of this job into fat speaking fees because obviously people want to hear what this amazingly intelligent woman has to say because she has almost no data at her fingertips and almost no command of simple concepts. So obviously worth a lot to hear what she has to say in this current thing. So that is really, really bad. So I would direct Janet Yellen to this website, which is Foundation for Teaching Economics. This is normally geared at high school students, but she might want to look at lesson three called Incentives Matter. This is like right at the front of the entire economics textbook. Like this is economics 101 or maybe even just 100 level. People respond to incentives, right? You got positive incentives. You got negative incentives. You got both positive and negative incentives and affect people's choices and behavior. Changes in incentives cause people to change their behavior in predictable ways. Like, oh, I'll keep my money with the big banks because it's guaranteed, right? And then the final thing that was put up here that I thought was a great point is like, so my banks in Oklahoma are going to get charged a special fee that's then going to be used to pay off Chinese national enterprises. Yes, you heard that right, and that's exactly the case. And when his banks locally, regionally get charged more, does that just come out of the magic bank money tree? No, That's either lower profits for that bank and or higher fees that are going to be passed on through to the consumers at that bank, a.k.a. taxpayers. So that's the story we have right now. But it's really astonishing to me that Janet Yellen in this testimony basically came off like a complete airhead, just stammering away like we don't tell anybody that they have to bank with the big banks. But at any rate, yeah. So let's see. OK, Julie Lenard has steam coming out of ears and fire from her eyes. Sorry, but that's the world we live in. I don't mean to help cause that, but this is, it's really important that we understand what's actually happening, because it's happening right now. We got to understand this, right? Context is everything, because then you understand once you go through this data like I do, and you get there and you really understand stuff, then you understand the critical value of this stuff, right? Silver. I love hard assets. I like having land. I like having animals, cows, trees, rocks, water, basic stuff, because I can't do anything about the level of idiocy at the Fed or at the Federal Reserve or at the Treasury Department, but I can protect myself. So that's it. Yeah, the DA writes, every bank has daily cash withdrawal limits. They absolutely do. Canada's 3,000 a day. It's very hard. In the United States, you can get more, but if you go over $10,000, you have a guaranteed automatic SAR, a suspicious activity report, that will be filled out by law by your bank that they have to send in. And even if you take out less than that, they may decide that this is suspicious to them, and they'll fill out one of these reports, and in it goes. You may get lost in that haystack, though, because last I looked for Massachusetts, they had like 1.7 million of these things filed in a year. So these suspicious activity reports are being filed all the time. Guarantee you, I'm in that stack somewhere because I like cash. I do take cash out. So, yeah. Hey, Joe Potter writing, if JPM loses control of the silver market, watch out. Well, they will at some point. I mean, let's just be very clear. So the reason I like silver is that it's each one of these silver rounds, besides being a thing of beauty, is represents energy. Do you know how much energy it takes to get these 20 ounces out of the ground? It takes so much energy. I'm talking diesel fuel. I'm talking human energy, capital. Like, it's very expensive. So this actually represents embodied energy to me. Not is this $22 an ounce, right? Is this $440 of stuff in my hand? You could look at it that way, but I don't think about it in dollar terms. I think about it in ounces, because this is actually represents tangible wealth. So that's what we're about to rediscover in this whole story, is the value of tangible wealth. Food, very important. Heat, very important. Metals, very important. They don't just show up. You know, it takes an immense amount of skill, effort to get that stuff out of the ground. So to me, extraordinary bargain. But if, let's just put it in context. Right now, there's, I'm dating myself because I don't have data within the last few months. But let's say there's in the vicinity of, somebody can look this up and tell me, I don't think there's more than maybe 130, 140 million ounces of silver in COMEX. The LBMA has some. You add up all the places where you might buy silver, and there's potentially, I've heard, an estimate of maybe a billion ounces of silver. Okay. Well, if you bought it at $22 an ounce, that's $22 billion. I know that sounds like a lot to you and me personally, but in the scheme of, like, if you look at what the Fed just printed this past week, blows that number out of the water by a factor of, I don't know, four or five, right? It's astonishing how much their balance sheet just expanded, expanded. You know, the bailout of SVB is going to be a $20 billion adventure. At any rate, all the silver known in the world is a rounding error in today's financial shenanigans. So does it have room to run? Yeah, probably. Just a little. Just a little. So let's turn now. Let's see if Janet can resurrect herself with the next line of questioning from Senator Johnson. Let's see if she can resurrect her stature and help us feel better about her command of the situation. Let's turn to this now.
You said that inflation has many causes. I agree with that. By the way, I would say that the number one economic problem is our debt and deficit. And I would say that the top three causes of inflation are massive deficit spending, the war on fossil fuels, which have driven energy, gasoline prices to record levels. Obviously, supply chain dislocation. That was caused by our miserably failed and incredibly stupid response to COVID, the pandemic. But would you agree those are the top three causes of inflation? Deficit spending, high energy costs, and supply dislocations?
I don't believe that deficit spending is one of the main causes
inflation. I mean, inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods. So now you're here testifying before about the president's budget. How much are the total deficits over that 10-year period, according to the president's budget? You don't know that off the top of your head? I'm running out. It's $17 trillion.
That was impressive, huh? So she doesn't know the basic numbers about anything. And that conversation went on, and she didn't know the total amount of the outstanding debt in the country either. And then she went on from there to say, it's not really the amount of debt you have, it's the proportion of interest expense as a percent of GDP. So this little arcane measure, which is fair. I'll take you through that line of thinking. But it was like she just didn't know anything, right? But to disagree with the idea that deficit spending is not a source of inflation is, again, economics 100 level debased reasoning. It's just, it's unbelievable that she doesn't know that. So, let's go there. She didn't know the level of the debt. I know, because I go to the treasury.gov site. I know that it's a little over $31 trillion. It has a public component. Get my drawing tool back here. It has a public component, and then it has this intra-governmental holdings component, and that is Social Security IOUs, principally, that the government is holding, saying, oh, we'll pay these back. But again, if you understand basic accounting at all, it is impossible for an entity with two pockets to shift an IOU from one pocket into the second pocket and count it as an asset. But they do that. Social Security counts this as an asset of the federal government, but it's not. It's an IOU. It's the dumbest thing ever. If you tried to do this as a private business, it'd be called Enron, and you'd be going to SEC prison, if they have such a prison. You'd be going to Club Fed. So at any rate, but it's $31 trillion, and it's going to, with 17 more trillion rounding errors, we're at $50 trillion of debt. That's where the president's budget goes over the next 10 years. So by 2033, you want to know why 2033 is a momentous year as well? Because that's the year that Social Security, through the Congressional Budget Office, has calculated that they run out of, even those special IOUs. It is completely broke. So we're about to see in the next 10 years, no questions asked, the United States Social Security system is entirely broke. And that will necessitate laws being changed, entitlements being reneged on. That will require rule changes that will tax current workers more and dial back the amount of payments that people on Social Security get. In other words, immiseration, which is the process of making somebody poor and miserable. That immiseration process is something that is now, that gun is now leveled and pointed straight at retirees because of misfits like Janet Yellen, who can't command basic facts and doesn't even know what her job is. Remember, it's like when Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm gets up, she's on the podium, and she's the energy secretary. Reporter says, hey, how many barrels of oil a day does the United States consume? She says, I don't have those numbers with me. There's literally like only three numbers you need to have at your hands for any one of these big positions, right? And that would be one of them, Jennifer. The amount of oil that the United States consumes as Department of Energy Secretary? That would be amazing. So at any rate, but Janet Yellen doesn't know how much debt there is, isn't aware of what the deficit's going to be going forward, can't add all those up. But we're supposed to believe that there's going to be a market for $50 trillion of U.S. debt by the year 2033, that people are going to want to hold $50 trillion of debt. So she said, but it doesn't matter. What really matters is the debt to GDP. I could not agree more. This is actually a line of thinking I take people through in the Crash Courses book. The newest copy, say Wall Street Journal bestseller on the top, because we made the list. Thank you to everybody who helped that happen. if you want to understand the higher level context of all the banking crises, if you want to understand why 2033 between here and there is a tough ride, it's all contained in this, because you have to understand resources, energy, and economics. You have to understand how those come together to get this higher view. But for now, let's just get back to the crisis du jour. So she says debt to GDP is what matters. Sure. Okay. Well, this is debt of the United States, total debt, approaching, well, that's 90 trillion here at this line. It's actually at 92 trillion. And this is GDP down here. I think you can appreciate something, which is these lines are getting farther and farther apart. That's no bueno. The equivalent to that would be, I'm piling up my credit card debt that I leave outstanding as an outstanding balance is doubling every 6 years. But over that same 6 year period, my income is only going up by 40%. So 100% increase in debt, 40% increase in income. And those things get wider and wider. And I hope we all appreciate sooner or later, we have not just a math problem, but a solvency problem. This is the trend we're on, and is no good. It's really bad. And everybody knows it. And it's getting worse. You can see this line. If you have a sharp eye, you'll see how this line down here is kind of flat. This line is accelerating. It's getting steeper, right? So if this line is at, say, that trajectory, this most recent last set of years is at this trajectory. So we can compare those two. No good. Not good. And this is easy. This is easy on it. This should be simple, open conversation at our levels of leadership. So, but she said, no, it's actually interest payments as a percent of GDP. So let's go to interest payments of the U.S. government, because, you know, the Federal Reserve just raised rates, and the interest payments from 2021 went from $600 billion a year on an annualized basis to, at the end of 2022, went to $852 billion. So that's a $252 billion increase. Interest payments spiked by 42%. How much did our economy spike by? That would be called 0.7%. Not no bueno. So just trends not good. And here you can see this is 2021's U.S. GDP at $23.315 trillion, slated to be a little higher than that when they get the final numbers in on this table. Not really slated to go anywhere in 2023, up another 0.7%. So GDP isn't going anywhere. So if it's interest payments to GDP, I think you can see GDP not spiking. Interest costs spiking. Not spiking. Spiking. So this is what Janet ought to be talking about as the Treasury Secretary. So my best guess is this is looking at interest payments as a percent of gross domestic product here. And you can see here it's been hovering between, say, this is 1.5%, this is 2%. So during the healthy periods of time, which is back in the 50s when we had lots of oil, another course, if you want to understand why that's an important sentence, you got to understand the energy story. But generally speaking, we were about between 1 and 1.5% through the 50s, 60s, 70s. And then this is the bad years. This is where things kind of went off the rails here for the United States. This was a period of exceptionally high inflation. And then this was a huge period of monetary printing, driving interest rates towards zero. And this red line is what I had to hand draw in, but this is where I think, based on the calculations of how big is the GDP, how high are our interest payments, answers the question, we're going to be at this level in 2023. So basically at the top end of this range, it probably headed higher because things are just not headed in the right direction. So yeah, Besso Ami 1, we make rainbows. And yeah, we do. And don't forget the Skittles and unicorns. It's all awesome. The Super Chris asks, so what is the best answer for morons like me who know nothing and have no savings? Skills, skills, skills. Learn skills. Those never go out of style. No matter what happens with if our dollar dies or the economy crashes, listen, there will always be an economy. Right now, you could go to a Supermax prison in some place in, you know, I don't know, Leavenworth, and you will find there's an economy inside that prison. It might not be dollar-based, but there's an economy. Humans will always make an economy. Now, what's an economy? You have something, a skill, a good, a service that somebody else wants. That's the basis of an economy. How we trade for that, whether we're using barter, chickens for eggs for butter, or whether we're using a type of money, or we have to refashion our own money, or it doesn't matter. An economy is always based on this idea that people generate value, and that comes from your skills. So if I had no savings, saw this coming, I'd be working very, very hard on my skill sets. I would learn to become a master distiller. I would learn how to do carpentry. I would be learning how to grow things. I would be learning how to butcher things. I'd be learning how to preserve food. I would be learning how to fix cars. I'd be learning some skills, basic skills. That's what I would be doing if that was my particular situation. So Garad Munch, yep, thank you so much that you got the crash course. You've been skimming through it, familiar with a lot of it. There is a bunch of new chapters in there, so I hope that gels for you. If it should, I hope. It's just adding up basic. It's what I do. I'm like a common sense machine. I'm just like dots, put them in a row, and you go, oh, it makes a pattern. So this idea that the United States is going to just sort of like, you know, skate our way through by bullying people and printing more money, it's a broken idea, and it's going to really fall apart in these next sets of years. Absolutely is. Keep bees. Animal husbandry. Yeah, keeping bees. So we just put together our beehive frames, all fresh, assembled them with a nail gun. And we're getting our first bees here at Honey Badger on April 22nd. They arrive. So we're getting a couple packages. We're gonna learn bees. And guess what we're going to do? We're going to make some mistakes. You know what we've been doing this spring? This is actually still warm. This is maple syrup that we just made today. This was just canned out today. So this was sap in a tree yesterday. So we've been making, we probably got about 3 gallons of that. So now I know how to do this. Been demystified. Understand. It's not like I watched a YouTube video and I think I got it. We did it. So yeah, Ryan and Evie and I have been busy making syrup. So that is awesome. But let's turn. Maybe there's another leader out there who can make us feel better about all this. Jay Powell, help us feel better about the debt situation in the United States. You don't have the Jay Powell one? Uh-oh. All right. Shoot. So this is Jay Powell saying, maybe you could look it up. I don't know if you could find it, Ryan, but it's very quick on Twitter to find. Jay Powell basically says here that the level of debt the U.S. has is, there's nothing wrong with the current level, but the path we're on is unsustainable. So he's trying to parse that out and say, you know, he's asked the question, is the amount of debt we have, you know, a kill shot? And he's like, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with the current level of debt. That's, yeah, but if it stayed at its current level of $31.4 trillion, see how I knew that number, Janet Yellen? It's amazing. There's nothing technically wrong with 31.4 at current levels, but it's not going to stay there. It's going to go different directions. So that's what Jay Powell is saying in this clip. He's basically mumbles his way through and says it's fine unless it keeps doing what it's been doing for the past 20 years. And what I mean by past 20 years, this is what I mean. That's the United States debt level starting here in 1900. So this is a really compressed chart, but you can see here this little spot right here. See this little spot, this little thing, this little elbow moment where we turn the corner here on this exponential chart. You know what that is? That's 1971. That's where we went off the gold standard. Our debt became untethered from anything meaningful or rational or reasonable, and that's what it's looked like ever since. Totally not sustainable. Oh, wait a minute. Hold it. This only goes up to 2020. What happened over the last 3 years? Let me see if I can put that up here on the chart for you. There we go. There, that's better. So I've taken that up to $31.4 trillion. bold move, Cotton, saying that that's not sustainable. Well, no, duh. The only way you can keep a chart like that looking like that is if it keeps going that way forever. And it's not going to keep going that way forever because that's called infinite growth on a finite planet. Not only is it not a good idea, it's absolutely mathematically bankrupt. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So that
it's debt your opinion that
claims.
The level.
Oh, did you find it?
I did.
Yeah, let's play it because it's just something about how he mumbles his way through this. I just love this.
It's your opinion that the level of debt we have is sustainable?
Yes. I mean, we have the, you know, the largest economy in the world. We can service this debt. That's not the problem. The problem is that we're on a path where the debt is growing substantially faster than the economy. And that's kind of by definition in the long run unsustainable. And the way countries have gotten or fixed that is with longer term programs that have bipartisan support and that address the actual problem in the budget. That's really the formula.
That's so good. Can we just hear that one more time? Just his part. Don't need to see if you can just find that. I mean, this is about as clear as you will ever hear somebody speak. And if you really understand what he just said, you will be taking precautions and new steps in your own life around it. Because when your money system breaks, everything breaks. What do I mean by that? I mean Zimbabwe. I mean Venezuela. I mean, Austria, 1918. When your currency breaks, everything in your society breaks. So when your federal debt is unsustainable, that means someday it can't be paid. You will go into what we call the nuclear reactor spin-out cycle, where a supercritical reactor goes super, super critical and blows up. That's when you are borrowing money to pay off the interest from the money you just borrowed, right? So when the U.S. government is having to borrow $3 trillion because it has a $2 trillion interest payment to make, and then next year it has to borrow $4 trillion to satisfy the $3 trillion interest payment it has to make, and on it goes very quickly. And then your whole society frays. Things break down. Things don't work. We don't have a parallel money system. All of this is why I think we have a central bank digital currency coming. It is the need for a great reset is contained in what Jerome says right here, which is, Houston, we have a math problem.
Just economy in the world, we can service this debt. That's not the problem. The problem is that we're on a path where the debt is growing substantially faster than the economy. And that's kind of by definition in the long run unsustainable. And the way countries have gotten or fixed that is with longer term programs that have bipartisan support and that address the actual problem in the budget. That's really the formula.
The formula. Jay, I would love to see your history, because I know of exactly one example in all of human history when a country dug itself out from a debt to GDP level that was 260%. Just one. Every other country has failed. They've gone down the currency destruction path. I know of literally no other examples. And what is that one example? This is England from the period of 1815 through about 1860. They were at 260% debt to GDP. They were just coming out of the Napoleonic Wars. 1815, they defeat France at Waterloo, and they had this little thing called the Industrial Revolution is a tailwind to that particular story. So they dismantled the war machinery, so they had all that war savings. They had a defeated country that gave them, a superior sort of an economic position in the region. They were able to bestride the oceans in the world as the uncontested leader, and they had the Industrial Revolution, and they dug out from a 260% debt to GDP. The United States right now, if you look at all of its forms of debt, stands at about 1,100% debt to GDP. And so that includes underfunded liabilities and things like that. So it's monstrous. It'll never be repaid. But ignoring his little attempt to say, if we had the right bipartisan support, we could solve this. It's not mathematically solvable. Full stop. But his earlier statement was, when your debt's growing faster than your economy, that's the definition of unsustainable, right? So, let's see. What else we got down here? Anybody else? Someone asked, who is pulling the strings? Who profited from the outcome of the Battle of Waterloo? There's your answer. Well, Erg, you're absolutely right. So this is always a story of banks by banks, for banks, bankers, and banksters, the criminals. They've always funded both sides of a conflict because they don't actually care about the outcome of the conflict. They care about the debt the conflict creates. You control the debt, you control the country. That's been the model for a long time. Now, people are waking up to this and catching on, getting a little restive about the whole thing. So that's actually what we're seeing. But it turns out Janet Yellen, a lot of people out there don't get the power of incentives. So now I want to, in our remaining time, I want to just talk about this idea of incentives. So this is a recent thing that just came out, and I'm going to use the San Francisco leadership as potentially representative of people who don't understand incentives at all. And I don't know what happened. What happened that a class of people lost the ability to understand the power of incentives and how they shape behavior? So what could possibly go wrong with San Francisco leaders? They've just showed support for it, but let's imagine they got their wish. They were able to put this program in, which is $5 million in slavery reparations payments for eligible Black residents, described as a one-time payment of $5 million to each eligible Black resident among recommendations unanimously accepted by San Francisco's Board of Supervisors as part of a draft plan by a panel proposing reparations. So that's the plan. What could possibly go wrong? Well, I could imagine that $5 million that San Francisco might dedicate to each eligible Black resident would have to come from somewhere, and that the Board of Supervisors doesn't actually have their own magic money tree, so it comes from somewhere. That money would then come out of taxes for the city, that they probably don't have that level of money kicking around, so they would have to raise taxes. Who would they be raising taxes on? Probably both. Well, maybe they'd raise them on Black people and white people, but I'm going to bet they're just going to raise them on not Black people, so that would be everybody not Black. And all of a sudden, you're going to be paying a lot more in taxes and getting a lot less back. And just like that whole story about how people working on a collective farm instead of their own farm just don't work as hard because of this mystery thing called incentives and its effect on human behaviors, what we will see is that a lot of people who are productive business owners and otherwise the top end of the tax tier in San Francisco will perceive this as a negative incentive and move away. This is just so easy to predict. It's not even like, I want to know, did the draft plan by the panel include the cost that would happen as people disincentivized decided to flee the increasing hellhole that San Francisco is rapidly turning itself into? It's just, it's an astonishing clown world moment like this. Just that you can have this conversation without anybody talking about the possible impact, the incentive-based impact of this policy. I mean, we're talking about it, but I mean, it's not in this article. It's not in any article I read. It's just like, oh yeah, this is something we ought to do. It's astonishingly short-sighted and inappropriate. But we can always just keep going on our. So the other thing under Proposition 47, Prop 47 in California, this was a proposition that said any theft under $950 is no longer a felony. It's a misdemeanor. So if you know anything about how cops work and prosecutors, all this and that, the desire to go out and chase down misdemeanors is not, the incentive isn't quite as high as when you're swamped with felonies and other things like that. So they passed this proposition, and the next thing you know, all these people were just strolling into CVS's and Walgreens and filling up bags with high, you know, expensive like hair products and, you know, medicines and OTC medicines. And so shoplifting went through the roof because the incentive wasn't there to stop it, right? But the AP News, which I've never seen a single fact check that AP has done that hasn't been a complete shit show of wrongness or wokeness, if there's a differentiation between those two terms. So AP News fact checks this claim. Under Proposition California, thefts under 950 will not be prosecuted. False, they say in their assessment. Prop 47 was passed in California in 2014 and reclassified felony theft as misdemeanors. It didn't allow shoplifting and petty theft to go unprosecuted, but that's what happened, of course. So, but this is a standard AP thing where they set up set up a straw man and then they knock it down. It's classic. It's just par for the course. So these people, whoever it is at these AP fact checkers, I don't know, they're Bryn Mawr, you know, English majors, Columbia Journalism School people, whatever. They are amongst the biggest idiots I've seen so far. I mean, that's something. So Terrence, and all you other fact checkers there at AP. Well done on once again getting it exactly wrong while trying to get it exactly right. A whiff. You're playing T-ball, wiffle ball, and you just can't connect with the actual ball. It's sad, Terrence. It's really sad. At any rate, the death of woke, says Mordrake WSS. We can hope, I guess. I mean, so woke is a weird, it's like a mind virus to me, as I see it now, because it's at once offensive and brittle, but demands that nobody ever be offensive, or that it's just totally disconnected from where prosperity and value actually come from. It's got this strange view that says until everybody is on board with our ideology, we can't get to this magic utopia, you know, that's always just out of sight, you know. That's how I'm increasingly seeing it, but they're dangerous people, because what they're going to do is they're going to destroy stuff. And they've told us that flat out. We have to destroy this first so we can build back better. I mean, they told us about it, right? Wasn't it a tip-off to anybody else that the Kamala Harris, Joe Biden website on the campaign trail was buildbackbetter.gov? That was literally their campaign website, buildbackbetter.gov. And Build Back Better, of course, is a WEF slogan that's being promoted by all kinds of different people, Justin Trudeau and, you know, Australian leadership and New Zealand leadership and European leadership. Is this whole thing? Wasn't that strange? Like, they're sitting around going, what should we call our campaign website? I know, buildbackbetter.gov. That's just, at any rate, off they went. So what is woke? This is my Venn diagram of wokeness. And this comes from my Twitter experience. I find that, you know, this is how I have to draw the Venn diagram. And you can read those things out there, because a couple of them I still can't really say here without losing subscribers. Thanks, YouTube. But this is it's a weird amalgam of things that I don't know how you fit them together. But this is how it seems to sort of come together for me anyway. So I was trying to understand it better. So I drew a Venn diagram. But I think this is, if we want to understand Janet Yellen, if we want to understand this, yeah, it is that one world government, Shannon. Absolutely. And, hey, good morning, Melbourne. Yeah. Good morning. Let's see. Yeah, Chris Kroll says it's all the Build Back Better belt and road great reset. Wow, it's crazy. But let's look at this is how I understand this now. I saw this chart and I redrew it so it was a little simpler, because somebody put a hand-drawn one up on Twitter. And so this is a 2x2 matrix. You either are on this axis, honest on this end, or corrupt on this end, or you're competent and all the way down to incompetent down here. So if you are both honest and incompetent, you are unemployable. Yes, I suck at this thing you're trying to hire me for. But if you are honest and you're competent, well, you're in the burnout quadrant, because you're going to be the person who all the work gets shoveled to, and you're going to do your best to do it because you're competent and you're honest. But what if you're incompetent and corrupt? Well, now you're a lifer in this, you know, you become a lifer in any company, you become a lifer government employee, all of that stuff. That's Janet Yellen. I increasingly see her as incompetent, but also corrupt, right? So she's the person who was regulating the banks, and then literally the day after leaving the chairmanship of the Federal Reserve, accepting $250,000 per pop speaking engagements from Goldman Sachs and the like, right? So that's what that corruption looks like. But if you're competent, there are competent people on the corrupt side. If you're competent and corrupt, that's the revolving door. So you leave your regulatory position, you go work for the people you usually were regulating, whether that was in the pharma to FDA axis, or that's in the Wall Street to SEC axis, or any of those other pieces, right? So you get in that revolving door, but this is the Davos zone. They fundamentally are on the corrupt side, and it's a strange, weird Build Back Better amalgam of revolving door and lifer types. They're just really, to the extent you have any hope that they're going to pull off a reset without causing massive damage, you should study this chart, because it's not going to happen. It's just how it is. Now we're flogging silver. Bye-bye, Jennifer Bond. So you're probably a little behind in the street. Yes, it's not flogging. I have a whole reason why I like this stuff. So flogging, I guess that means I have something to gain by telling you about silver. I don't own any silver mines. I don't have any particular silver things to tell you about, but I do hold it, and I'll tell you why. Because this stuff is depleting from the crust of the earth. All the high-quality mines have pretty much been discovered. There's some remaining dribs and drabs, and it takes an immense amount of energy to get this out of the ground, and that is coming to an end. Our ability to expend immense amount of energy on anything we want. We'll have a war and a broken interstate highway system, and we'll have people commuting in F-250 trucks, and we're going to get all the food we want to eat and silver out of the ground. The future I see is these things begin to fall off the weight off the vine, and there will come a time when we have to make a decision. Are we going to spend the next 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel trying to get, 13 gram per ton silver out of the ground, or are we going to grow some corn this year, right? That'll be a decision we're going to make at some point. So flogging, flogging is slang for selling, so sail away, but I'm not selling anything. I'm telling you, I don't sell silver. I just give you my ideas. You do with it what you will. At any rate, when I think about this whole woke side of things, the woke, they keep talking about they want equity, right? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. So Alexander Solzhenitsyn, I think, said it very, very well, where he said human beings are born with different capacities. And if they are free, they're not equal. And if they're equal, they're not free. Of course we're born with different capacities. I worked my little butt off for a decade, long time, trying to learn how to play guitar. I'm okay at it. But man, you should have seen what happened when my brother picked one up. Within a week, he was better than me. It was just like he had a native capacity for that. I can put on an 80-pound backpack and slog up a big hill. I can't jump, right? I just have my physiology is just fundamentally different. So that's okay. Human beings are born with different capacities. And not only is that okay, but viva la différence. Of course you want people who are tall and short and skilled at this and that. That's the true diversity that matters. So of course we're born with different capacities. Well, if we're free, then we're not equal. Your ability to jump, climb, do math, something will not be equal to mine. Higher, lower, better, different, whatever, doesn't matter. But if we're all equal, then we're not free. And that's what I see as this whole idea of this move towards equality. We have to do what's right. Because we all have to have the exact same outcomes, despite not being the same people. It's as bizarre as Janet Yellen pretending not to understand why people would move deposits out of uninsured banks into insured banks. It's a bizarre concept, but they're serious about it. They're actually serious about this concept, and that's a little worrying to me. So I ran across this definition of woke, which I really loved, which is a state of awareness only achieved by those, silly enough, to find injustice in everything except their own behavior. So that's a possibility. That's a little bit how I see this this going forward. This is part of what we see now in San Francisco with the loss of prosecution for certain crimes or people who track the amount of racial violence that is now mushrooming. And Asians are feeling particularly attacked, and this is happening over and over again. So I just want to close with this idea of I want to welcome you to the future. So I told you about Social Security in the United States is actually bankrupt, provably out of money by 2033, and it doesn't even have the money that it's going to run out of. It's going to run out of special treasury bonds, which is, again, money being put from pocket A into pocket B by the U.S. government and counting it as an asset. It's a fiction. But we're already seeing the early taste of this. And by the way, if you want to know why we're not going to be able to fund all of our retirement dreams, it's in the ideas here, which is fundamentally, once you understand energy and you can put your energy goggles on and you know particularly about net energy, then you'll understand why all of these dreams and hopes that we're going to be able to just work to 62 and then retire and live these lives of relative luxury for the remaining balance of our lives, that idea is an artifact of high net energy outcomes, and that when energy starts to get pinched, the total net energy available, things will simplify, things will skinny down. And I don't mean simplify like get easier, not like simplifying a math problem. We're going to talk about people who no longer can achieve the level of comfort that they were sold on. And this is happening in France. It begins now. So French President Macron, odious, terrible guys, in my opinion. But he overrides the parliament to pass this retirement age bill. And so what did they decide to do? He decided to use special constitutional powers. You love it when they break out the special ones to push his plan, to raise the retirement age to 64 from 62. So the people of French, they have a very long history of rioting and meeting the idiocy of their government with force and riots and things like that. But at any rate, Emmanuel Macron just decided, oh, you know what we're going to do? We're going to raise the retirement age by a couple of years. So everybody in the system, particularly those who were close to that age, very unhappy with that decision. And it was just his decision, using special constitutional powers, right? And he overrides parliament, and he does that. So what happens next? Well, this is what happens next. France does what France does, and this is coming soon to a theater near you. This is just from last night, Paris. That's what it looks like when people get restive, when people finally figure out that their hopes and dreams have been crushed and taken from them. And unfortunately, I don't see any way of avoiding this going forward because we simply don't have the resources here. We don't have the energy. We don't have the oil. We don't have the low levels of debt to be able to pay off all these hopes and dreams. Now, we could. We were going to get actual egalitarian around it and share what is remaining in some sort of a reasonable way. But you know how the system goes. It's rigged. So FTX loses billions. Oops, Sam Bankman-Fried's riding around in jets in first class with an ankle monitor on. Oops, you know, the C-suite of the Silicon Valley Bank decided to offload a bunch of their personal shares. Maybe those will get clawed back, but, you know, they just, whoops, rode off with their millions of dollars, and, you know, people got, caught with that. But I'll guarantee you what's going to happen. The rich will take care of themselves because they have an incentive to do that, and everybody else is going to get a little bit screwed. So our economic pie is not growing. It's now stagnating. It can't grow anymore, but they keep putting more and more debt into it, and they make sure that the holders of that debt are a very, very tiny select minority, and everybody else has to keep paying into that system. And so this is just creates the pressures. The pressures blow up. It looks like France, and that's where we go in this whole thing. So that's sort of my summary of how I see this banking system at this point in time. And LYHS0219. Isn't it true that billionaires stash trillions of dollars in offshore islands? I'm not sure how many trillions, but it's a large number. There's lots and lots of money stashed offshore, but not money, it's currency. They have trillions of dollars sort of parked in the Caymans and offshore accounts, Jersey Islands, Guernsey. It's parked here in Monaco. It's in places. But let's ask the other question, the derivative question, which is what happens if or when those rich people suddenly decide they would rather not hold those paper claims, or in this case, digital ones and zero claims, and they would rather own real tangible stuff. Let me flog silver one more time. Or whatever it is. Could be land, any sort of sets of commodities. When they decide they want to not hold the claims, which is money or currency, they'd rather hold the stuff that you would eventually use the currency to buy. Well, that's when you would see a very, very rapid, very large, very quick stampede out of currencies into other things. So this is what we're talking about at Peak Prosperity now, the banking stuff. If you want to go deeper on this, ask me more questions. We've got a great, very experienced crew of people there. That's who you should be talking to as well, because there's a lot of things going on now with China, Saudi Arabia, Iran, with Russia, the petrodollar. All of this is sort of coming to a head right now, but no surprise, the standard reign for a debt-based currency to exist is about 50 years. And the reason for that is due to the exponential function, where things just go quick at the end and get away from you. And that's the landscape we're in right now. And so people are feeling that. We're not comfortable with it. More and more people are waking up all the time with common knowledge to the idea that we've been lied to, comprehensively, that our leadership is not just corrupt, but possibly incompetent, or both. They're lifers, right? That's the world we live in. And so what do? Well, you control what you can. You understand there are disruptions coming. You don't dwell on the negatives overly. You just enough to understand what you're up against. And then you find your tribe. You build your skills. You take your wealth out of currency and into real wealth. Again, something tangible. And the sooner, if you do that, you have a chance of avoiding the worst of what's to come. A lot of people are going to get caught on the short side of this because, again, that's how things go. How did Hemingway go broke? Slowly, then all at once. This story has been developing slowly across decades and then all at once, right? Who was it? I guess it was, what's the saying that sometimes there are decades where nothing's happened and sometimes there are weeks where decades happen, right? So that was some Soviet leader. I forget which one. But at any rate, we're in the place where now decades are happening in weeks. We're at the all at once stage, and it's disorienting, which is why having access to good information that's synthesized so that you can begin to make sense of it, and information without action, totally useless. So my hope for you is that you take this information that I present and the stuff we have at Peak Prosperity or wherever you get it, just assemble as much information as you need to take new and different actions, because the world in the future is not going to be like the one we just came out of. We have a whole new future coming. There will be an economy there. It might be very different from the one before. What we value, what money we use, how much things are available, what the actual economy is fashioned out of, all that's up for grabs. So we're in this period where it's all about to get rewritten. So how do you navigate a place like that? Well, it's called surfing. You want to make sure you're nimble, you got your balance under you, you're adjusting rapidly. And if you don't adjust rapidly, hanging out with people who do adjust rapidly, because that's the world we live in. All right. Hemingway suffered the exponential broke function from RR. Yeah, absolutely. Agree with that. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks for being here today. I got to get back on with my Saturday, and I'm sure you do too. And please share this, hit like, remember to resubscribe or subscribe if you haven't already, because this channel is trying to get over a magic number, a big round number, and we're close, really close. So hit like, hit subscribe, share this with anybody you think might benefit from it, and we'll be back with you next time. Bye-bye.